It is the Banner Ravens podcast. Paul Mancano and Jonas Schaefer, a day away from the start of the 2024 NFL draft. Jonas, you and I were not planning to podcast today. We were not planning to go live here on this Wednesday afternoon, but the Ravens decided to go ahead and break some news for us, similar to a year ago when they made their massive extension with quarterback Lamar Jackson right before the start of the NFL draft. They have another extension planned on the eve of the draft. This one for about a tenth of the money, maybe a 5% of the money that Lamar Jackson got. That would be Rashad Bateman getting what is reported to be a three-year, $15 million extension. We know it's 3 years. We know it's through the year 2026. Jonas, I did not see this one coming. Did you see this coming at all?
Definitely not. I thought we would be asking Eric DaCosta at the presser on Thursday or Friday or Saturday whether they were going to pick up the fifth-year option. This has been an offseason full of questions for Ravens officials about how they feel about Rashad. And there was, I believe, talk from, I think, Eric DaCosta at the end of the season about how they were looking to get some work done with their returning wide receivers or with the receivers who they had in-house. Obviously, that meant at the time getting a one-year extension done with Nelson Aguilar. But I thought that this would be kind of a clean break for Rashad Bateman and the Ravens because, you know, after this year, obviously, just because I think he's a prideful guy. And again, if what this deal is reported to be 3 years, $15 million, according to Spencer Schultz, with the Exit 52 podcast network, that is kind of selling yourself short, I think, if you are a first round receiver. Obviously, he has not had the production that is commensurate with a deal that's anywhere close to, say, what Hollywood Brown got from the Chiefs. But I think considering just the injury risk and the possibility of re-injury this year, then, you know, why not kind of lock that chunk of change down? We don't know how much of that is guaranteed. We don't know how many incentives are built into this deal that might juice those numbers up. But it's, I think, good business for the Ravens and probably good business for Rashad. Just, you know, he was drafted young enough that if he does a really, really good job on this deal, he's going to be, what, like 27 by the time he's up for that third year, basically entering his athletic prime, assuming that he's gotten past this unfortunate injury bug. So I think it's good business all around, but probably more favorable to the Ravens just because they didn't have a wide receiver besides Zay Flowers signed beyond this year. So now you have the possibility of Zay and Rashad Bateman being together as a partnership through 2026, which has got to be really excitement if you believe in those guys' potential.
I'm not as high on this deal as you are. I'll get to that in just a little bit. But before we do, let's talk about who Rashad Bateman has been and why this deal also made sense financially for the Ravens, because they were not going to pick up his fifth-year option, I don't think. They have decisions to make on both Rashad Bateman and their other 2021 first-round pick, which is Odafe Oweh. I think they're probably going to pick up Odafe Owe's fifth-year option, or they're going to offer him extension. Of the two guys that they had to make a decision on by May 2nd, I thought Odafe Oweh would be the one getting the extension. That doesn't mean that they won't still extend Odafe Oweh. I just thought it was much less likely that Rashad Bateman would get it. Now, look, Rashad Bateman, he's 24 years old. He has played three seasons in the NFL, just 34 games. He has been hampered by injuries through his first three seasons. He was coming off a Lisfranc last year and played all but one game. He played 16 games. I think this is a fine bit of business. However, I still think the Ravens' priority in the wide receiver room should be to get a wide receiver one. I think they still need a number one guy or a 1A if you believe that Zay Flowers can be your number one. You need somebody at least as good as Zay Flowers. If you're making this move right now to make Rashad Bateman your number three wide receiver for the 2024, probably 2025 season and beyond, fine. But their plan this offseason just cannot be to run it back with Zay Flowers, Rashad Bateman, and Nelson Aguilar, lose OBJ, and somehow hope to be better. I mean, Rashad Bateman last year I'll call it like it is. It was a disappointing season for Rashad Bateman. We both expected more from Rashad Bateman. You had Todd Monken as your first year offensive coordinator. You had a prolific offense. You had one of the best Ravens offenses you've had in a long time. You had an MVP season from Lamar Jackson. Rashad Bateman finished the season with 367 receiving yards. He has had four receiving touchdowns in his entire career. And I know, as we said, he was coming back from an injury. He wasn't fully healthy the entire season. And break down the tape to show that he is getting great breaks, that's terrific. He and Lamar Jackson, their connection got worse in 2024 than it did in his first two seasons in the league. We don't fully know exactly why. There's reason to believe it might get closer to where it was prior to 2023 after this year. But I was disappointed with what I saw from Rashad Bateman this year. And if it came down to them not exercising his fifth-year option, letting him play out the final year in 2024 and letting him go, or extending him, I thought they were going to take the former.
Let's drill down on the semantics here. By wide receiver one, do you mean one of the 32 best wide receivers in the NFL, or one of the actual guys who has that wide receiver one gravitational pull? Because one of those is a lot harder to get than the other.
Say that again.
One of those is a lot harder to get than the other. Is by wide receiver one, do you mean one of the 32 best wide receivers in the NFL, or do you mean like wide receiver one the way people on NFL Live talk about it?
I mean, ideally, you'd like both, right?
I'm just saying, like, they are up against it resource-wise, where they're not going to be drafting high enough to, for the foreseeable future, to get a guy with the talent of a Roma Dunze, and they're not going to have enough money to afford someone like, you know, a T. Higgins. Even if you consider T. Higgins a wide receiver one, he's been wide receiver two in Cincinnati. He's had some injuries. So I just don't know what you can do at this point if you're the Ravens besides just get a lot of really good, if not necessarily great, receivers. I mean, I think this whole issue of wide receiver depth gets a little bit lost in the sauce sometimes because you are overlooking the fact that the Ravens do not need to run three wide sets. They don't need to run four wide sets. You can be a good passing offense with Zay Flowers, Rashad Bateman / first or second round pick from this year's draft, Mark Andrews, Isaiah Likely. All four of those guys, assuming they're healthy, assuming Bateman, you know, has the route running ability that he showed last year, I think demand attention from other defenses. And I think if you look around the NFL, you know, we get a little bit too high on the supply of teams like the, you know, the Dolphins with Tyreek and Jalen Waddle. You know, you look at what I don't know, like the Steelers had a couple of years ago when it was Deontay Johnson and George Pickens and, you know, Chase Claypool when people thought he was good. So I think a lot of this just comes down to, do you have a quarterback who can throw guys open? Do you have a play caller who can scheme guys open? And do you have guys who can catch and a running game that can, you know, unbalance defenses? So would Lamar love to have a wide receiver one by whatever definition you want to describe it? Maybe that's Zay. Maybe he takes another step this year. Absolutely. But this is a hard capped league. And I think betting on Rashad Bateman and what he showed last year and just hoping that more targets, more routes where he's the first or second read, which was not the case last year, could make him a guy who goes for 700, 800, maybe 1,000 yards a season. We just don't know. I mean,
so you think he's going to go
the further three, you get? That was his first year back from a Lisfranc injury. You know,
but how often do guys go from a 367 yard season to a 1,000 yard season? That they take a 700 yard leap, not between their first year and their second year, but between their third year and their fourth year. How often do guys take that kind of leap? Like, I think it's reasonable to expect he's going to get better. I think it's reasonable to expect he could be over 500 yards, but it's reasonable to expect he could get hurt again. It's reasonable to expect he's not going to play 16 games again.
As a rookie in an offense, you know, coming back from a groin injury. And again, I know injury concerns are baked into this whole discussion about Rashad Bateman. As a rookie playing in a Greg Roman offense, playing with Tyler Huntley for like five games at the back end of that regular season, he had 515 yards. So you prorate that to what it would have been with a full season with Lamar Jackson, he might have got to 800, 900 yards as a rookie. He's a better receiver now. But then he gets hurt.
And he's a different player.
I know. But there's, if you want to, this is me being charitable. He's gotten past the groin injury. We haven't seen anything that would suggest that that is a chronic injury. And last year was his first year back from the Lisfranc injury. And yes, it took a while for him to get past that. But if he is good to go, and again, I know that's a big if, but Rashad Bateman, as he will tell you, as he has been very frustrated by, was not an injury-prone guy at Minnesota. Maybe going to the NFL and, you know, stepping on a rake somewhere in Baltimore just kind of affected him with this horrible football curse. But the pedigree is there. The route running is there. The connection with Lamar Jackson has not been there. And that is the last step to him becoming the kind of receiver that he could be in Baltimore.
I think the question is just, why did the connection get worse? Because they clearly had a better connection earlier on in Rashad Bateman's career. In his rookie season and in his second year, they were much more on the same page. And my question is, if you have an opportunity now to walk away from Rashad Bateman, to, you could say, cut your losses, that's being a little bit harsh, because he obviously was worth that first round pick given what he gave you that first year, but has not lived up to that pedigree the last couple of years. But you had a chance now to have a clean break and to not owe him any money after the 2024 season, and to try again at that position, I think, in the draft, because that's where you get the cheapest guys. That's your best chance to probably get one of these guys. I think you should have just taken that opportunity. You're now loading yourself up with more money that you're going to have to pay for a guy who's not going to be your number one. I would rather just save your resources for a guy who is a number one. And to answer your question from before, I mean, I just would like somebody who is of the ilk, who is as good as or better than Zay Flowers. And I think that they still can get that guy. They just have to, this deal is fine if Rashad Bateman is not your only plan, because I feel like we've gone backwards now. Last year, the whole offseason was about, how can we get better weapons around Lamar Jackson? Not only to convince him to sign a long-term extension, but to raise the ceiling of this offense. And that's why they took multiple avenues to try to do that. That's why they gave OBJ a $15 million contract and spent a first-round pick on a wide receiver. And now to take steps backwards and say, well, the offense was great last year, but we're not as focused. Now that we have Lamar under contract for a long time, we just can't afford to spend that much more on wide receiver. You have to continually invest in that position. The Super Bowl Chiefs,
and they are
not a model to going forward of how you can, you know, not invest in wide receivers and just rely, because there's only one Patrick Mahomes. Lamar Jackson is an MVP. I get it, but is he, how much is he raising the ceiling of his wide receivers play just by being him on the field?
Paul, last year, on a scale of small mad to medium mad to big mad, how mad were you that the Ravens gave Project Washington a 3-year, $15 million deal last offseason?
Not big mad.
Okay. I bring that up because why should there be any agony? Like $5 million is a pittance for what a wide receiver might cost. Kendrick Bourne, like we were talking about before the show, got over $6 million a year from the Patriots or wherever he went with like a 400-yard season. The wide receiver market is bonkers. Obviously, that lends itself to the idea of investing through the draft. But if you can get a high-end wide receiver two or even a middle-tier wide receiver two for $5 million a year, and again, we don't know if this deal is exactly 3 years, $15 million, but let's operate under the assumption that it is.
Sure.
That is fine business.
I think it is. And maybe my frustration comes more from watching Rashad Bateman play and expecting him to live up closer to his draft pedigree than he did last year. Because I think the deal itself, I'll take a step back here. I think the deal itself is okay. it just cannot be the only thing. It cannot be the only way for them to invest in wide receiver. If and they still might. I mean, the draft is one day away. They still could take a wide receiver with their first round pick. If Brian Thomas Jr. is there, they could take him and hope that he can develop into a future number one or number two. They still could take a wide receiver on day two. They still could trade for a wide receiver. There's still wide receivers out there that are being thrown around. I don't know if the Ravens will be able to trade for and then pay somebody like Brandon Ayuk. You know, spoiler, I don't think they can. But there are other ways that they can address this position, and I don't want to make it seem like this one move is, you know, an indictment of how they handle the position. I just think they need to do more than simply extending Rashad Bateman. But the 3 year, if it is $15 million, fine. But he has to be your number three wide receiver, I think, going forward. That's at least what you can expect from him. And if he returns to his pre-injury form and he breaks out for close to 1,000 yards, fine. But I just don't think you should have that high expectations for him.
We should set an over-under before the season on Rashad Bateman's receiving yards total. And some hilariously low stakes.
The thing is, he underperforms very statistically. 367 yards in 16 games is bad. One catch on three targets for 2 yards in the AFC Championship game, despite the fact that he got all those great releases and he got open. And I know that, Jonas, you have crunched the film and you have shown that he has consistently got open. That's good for him. But if I were the Ravens, I would just try to find somebody who has a better connection with Lamar Jackson, because it's proven that that connection, at least recently, has taken a step back.
Is there a player on the Ravens roster who most embodies the trolley meme of the sad guy and the happy guy, where it's like sad guy Rashad Bateman production, happy guy Rashad Bateman film?
Yeah. Yeah. It is a total dichotomy.
Just imagine what Rashad Bateman might do numbers-wise next year if Joe Milton really hits, Paul.
There you go. All right, let's get into
the draft here. By the way, speaking of, he wanted to send us a thank you note for your belief in him in the mock draft, which you can check on our podcast feed. But unfortunately, the envelope ended up in the Appalachian Mountains because he doesn't know how to deliver the ball or an envelope to where he's supposed to go.
Look, if it's long distance, he can deliver the ball. It's just the short to intermediate.
No, he can't. He can get it overnight, but he can't deliver it where he's supposed to go. That's the Joe Milton experience, baby.
The guy's got a rocket arm to the moon. Joe Milton in the fourth round, Jonas. I'm bumping him up my board.
Sixth round, right?
Oh, okay. Yeah, sixth round. We did a 7-round mock draft, by the way, yesterday. If you haven't gone back and watched that, please do so on Facebook, YouTube, or Twitter. By the way, give us a like, a thumbs up, a review anywhere that you get your podcast. Write us a good review and I will read it out here on the podcast if you give us 5 stars. That'd be very much appreciated. And of course, we will have a live stream pre-pick tomorrow, as well as a post-pick podcast. So tune in for that. All right, Jonas, let's give our final predictions, because I realized after consuming all of our draft content that we didn't give our actual predictions for what we think the Ravens are going to do in the draft tomorrow, and especially in the first round. First off, who do you think would be the least ideal pick at number 30? Who is like doomsday scenario? Everybody goes off the board and the Ravens are stuck there with a group of mediocre talent and they take this guy.
I think, and this is like such a high risk, high reward thing, but I would be, if I were a Ravens fan, I would be sick to my stomach if you see Roger Goodell get up there and say something like, with a 30th pick in the NFL draft, the Ravens have taken Xavier Worthy, wide receiver, Texas. I cannot abide by the notion of the Ravens taking another fast guy who's kind of slight of frame, questionable, projectionable talent, when there are other guys on this roster or in this draft pool who would be willing and able to contribute. There hasn't been a lot of smoke connecting the Ravens to Xavier Worthy. We haven't seen Lamar do any, you know, Instagram stories where he's like, wow, this guy's fast. I just think that because the Ravens need a wide receiver and because of their history for taking shorter, slighter wide receivers who can really just turn on the Jets, I think Xavier Worthy would be a hilariously tone deaf pick, I guess I would say.
Tone deaf. I mean, I'm not opposed to them taking a wide receiver in the first round at number 30. However, if it is Xavier Worthy, and honestly, the more that I have read about and thought about that, this wide receiver class, the less comfortable I feel with anybody after the top four, after you talk about the guys that'll go in the top 10 and in Odunze,
Brian Thomas Jr., I think could fall maybe more than we expect. Cause I guess he has a labrum injury that cropped up during the pre-draft process that has been a bit of a red flag. So that's even more of a reason to just only feel good about the top three.
Yeah. And like you said, it's after that, it's like, yeah, there are a lot of guys with high ceilings. There's a lot of potential there, but I would just not feel with a first round pick, you want to get a guy that you feel very good about contributing. And, you know, those guys seem like lower floor type players. When you talk about that second class of wide receiver, you've brought up Ladd McConkey though. I think of all the second tier wide receivers, quote unquote, the day two guys, I think Ladd McConkey might have the highest floor. He may not have the highest ceiling, but I think that he would fit in this offense. Todd Monken would know what to do with him. So long as he's healthy, so long as they're not worried about the injury concerns, I think McConkey, I would be more okay with maybe at 30 if he's there, and if they trade back, then heck yes for Ladd McConkey in the second round.
Who's your worst case scenario pick?
My worst case scenario, I mean, I'm not a big fan of Xavier Worthy. I mean, I think that the worst case scenario is just about everybody that we talked about, all those offensive tackles going off the board. And I saw Daniel Jeremiah tweet today that every team is trying to move up for a tackle. I mean, if Jordan Morgan is on the board, I think he'd be a meh pick at 30 overall. But right, if Jordan Morgan and all those other tackles are off the board, if there are like 8 or 9 tackles off the board by the time the Ravens pick, because I don't feel great about the wide receivers, I would just say at that point, trade back. And in order to avoid that, trade up. So I don't know if I have a one guy, but I just don't, I can't fathom a world in which all those tackles go off the board and the Ravens just stick and pick and take the 9th best offensive lineman in this draft.
Doing some digging on those offensive linemen who might be linked to the Ravens near the end of the first round, you know, obviously not in love with the idea of taking a Jordan Morgan or taking a Kingsley Suamataia at BYU at number 30. But, and I know intangibles aren't the least sexy thing about this draft process, but they do check a lot of boxes. I'm doing a story for tomorrow just on kind of what makes a Ravens draft pick. And I believe Morgan and Suamataia were both team captains. Both, or Morgan was a Senior Bowl guy. Both guys with relative athletic scores above 9. You know, both big for their position. Kingsley for offensive tackle, Jordan Morgan for guard. You know, Kingsley Suamataia is 21, which is a nice age for Ravens draft picks in the first round, just over the past decade or so of picking. Jordan Morgan, obviously, I think he's 22 now, but he would have been a 21-year-old had he not had the ACL injury last year and come out. So, you know, the Ravens pick the best player available. They want guys who play like Ravens, but in terms of some of the stuff that makes up the biography, the actual makeup of those guys, they are maybe a little bit more aligned with the Ravens' priorities and values off the field, if you want to call it that, than Tyler Guyton.
All right, let's come up with our prediction for the position for the first 4 picks in the Ravens draft. Do you have a specific position in mind for those first 4 picks, Jonas, in order?
Well, should we just do our first pick projection and then we can just build off that?
Sure. Let's do that. Who's your first pick projection and who do you think, if you had to predict right now, it's 30 overall, so it's tough to predict, but who would you put your money on?
I just think that with the run on offensive linemen that is possible and perhaps likely tomorrow, not just with the guys that we know, not just with the teams that we know are ahead of the Ravens, but a team like the Commanders maybe trading up, a team like the Cardinals maybe, you know, trading up again. I just think that it's very, very possible that there are not the quality of tackles available to the Ravens at number 30 that they would prefer. So I'm just going to say Alabama cornerback Kool-Aid McKinstry at number 30. Wow. I think he's a safe pick. He is a proven starter at the SEC level. He comes from a defense that is very, very schematically aligned with what the Ravens do. There's, you know, Nick Saban is a defensive genius. The Ravens are one of the more progressive organizations in the NFL when it comes to their defensive X's and O's. He has the production. He is unafraid of playing in press coverage. He is young, another 21-year-old. So I just think that because of my skepticism regarding the defensive line spot, or excuse me, the offensive line spot and perhaps the wide receiver spot, I just think Kool-Aid is a guy who consistently on a lot of these mocks is available there at that, you know, 26 to 32 range.
How often would Kool-Aid McKinstry see the field as a rookie? You already have Marlon Humphrey, Brandon Stevens. You brought back Arthur Millett. You have your two safeties set. Where exactly would he play and how much playing time would he get if everybody's healthy as a rookie?
I think the great thing about Marlon Humphrey is that you can just kick him aside and he's probably even better as a slot corner than he is as a outside corner. And that's what's exciting about this. You know, he is in a lot of ways the piece that makes the Ravens cornerback plans possible. They can go get an outside cornerback and feel good about, you know, kicking Marlon inside when they need to. They can go get an inside cornerback and keeping Brandon Stevens and Marlon on the outside. I think, you know, I guess what maybe gets interesting is what happens if he is, you know, a quick enough study that he possibly jumps Brandon Stevens as cornerback too, then what do you do there? does that actually help the Ravens because you are depressing Brandon Stevens' value and, you know, not giving him a whole lot of looks to go out and make that money in the final year of his contract? But, you know, I think he's a guy who could play 60-70% of the defensive snaps next year if that foot and the Jones fracture check out.
I would be fine with it. I think Kool-Aid McKinstry is, you know, still one of the best cornerbacks in this draft. I still think that the Ravens will address offensive tackle in this draft. I just don't think that they traded Morgan Moses for a fourth round pick swap, that they restructured Ronnie Stanley's contract to make this essentially the last guaranteed season if they didn't plan to take an offensive tackle in the draft. I know their plan is always best player available, but I really do think back in March, Eric DaCosta looked at this and said, this is going to be a historic offensive line draft. And I think they want to get one of these guys. That being said, they're going to have to battle for him. They're going to have to probably trade up if they want somebody in the top tier. And I know it's not their MO, but they have 9 picks. I'm imagining that they are going to trade up a few spots, maybe to 25, to 24. And they are going to take the Georgia offensive tackle.
Boy. Let's go.
I think it's going to happen.
That would be
remarkable. For the longest time, I didn't imagine that Eric DaCosta would make a move like this, but that's my prediction because I think that the talent itself, like we've talked about a million times with Amarius Mims, the number of games, the statistics, the production, not there yet for Amarius Mims, but the talent is a top 20, maybe top 15 pick, and he might end up being the first, second, third best tackle in this draft when all is said and done. So I think that they trade up to get a big, massive, beefy offensive tackle, and they put him at right tackle to start. Maybe he's their eventual left tackle, but I think they trade up a few spots to get Amarius Mims. That's my prediction, Jonas.
He obviously fits the prototype for what Ravens coaches have looked for, what Ravens officials have looked for in the past. Again, a lot of this is going to be in my story tomorrow on Draft Trends, but he's 21. He was a multi-sport athlete in high school, which is basically par for the course for a lot of Ravens picks, but I think it's notable in this case. Top 250 recruit, played for a Power 5 school, just a 96th percentile relative athletic score, 91st percentile for height, 94th percentile for weight. The only thing, and obviously this is baked into the reason why he might fall, is just that total lack of experience. Like, it is very, very hard to find a alignment the Ravens have picked at basically any round who has played as few snaps as Amarius Mims has over his career. You know, you pointed out yesterday, it's not that he's played in 8 games, it's that he started 8 games, but I think maybe altogether he's played like fewer than 1,000 snaps over his college career. And that is a number that some guys hit in just one season before the Ravens take them. So, you know, I think if we are talking about the Ravens having taken Amarius Mims tomorrow night, the distinction that I think should be made is not that he is raw, but it's that he's inexperienced, because you watch the tape and he bullies guys.
He looks great.
He hasn't been out there. He's a bully with a bad case of the the cold. He just is not in school very often enough to take kids lunch money, and that's the sad part about this.
Yeah, I think that there's just going to be, I think Olu Fashanu is going to be off the board. Joe Walt, Talisi Fuaga, J.C. Latham. I think maybe the only Graham Barton, I think, is going to be gone. I think the only other guy who will be in range that the Ravens could trade up for here is going to be Oklahoma's Tyler Guyton. I think if it's one of those two guys, and I think the Ravens are going to make a move if they have to go up and trade for that guy. All right, so we have set now. You have set cornerback. I have set offensive tackle. We're not going to predict the players, but their first four picks, they have 30, they have 62, 93, and is it 120 is the next one?
That sounds about right. So I would go after cornerback. I think they would go wide receiver in round two. I think they would trade up a little bit in round three to get a tackle, like a Blake Fisher, the athletic but fundamentally challenged tackle from Notre Dame. And then I think, just to troll me, running back before cornerback in round four.
Just because you wrote about how you don't want to see a running back taken until day three for this team.
Exactly. Yeah. I didn't write about it. I just yelled at you about it.
That's true. Yeah. I tend to agree with that. And also, this is, to go back to our conversation from the first half of the pod about Rashad Bateman, if they take a wide receiver in round two, that to me is a good investment of resources. And that to me would say, all right, they're investing more in this wide receiver position than just bring back Nelson Agholor and extending Rashad Bateman. I'm good with that. And to me, that makes this 3-year reported $15 million deal for Rashad Bateman, you know, even more acceptable. I don't know if they're going to take a wide receiver that early, though. I don't know what position exactly that they are going to target in day two, but I'm going offensive tackle for day one. I think that they're going to focus on defense with their second round pick. I'm thinking maybe defensive line. If Marshawn Neyland is there, I think that he could be a nice pick at 62. So I'm going defensive line, maybe edge rusher in round two. I'll go wide receiver in round three. And then with their fourth pick around 120, I'll say guard. Somebody else along that offensive line. They need plenty of help there, and I think that they double dip in the first four picks.
What would be the most flagrant position to overlook? I guess offensive line off the board. Which of the next tier of positions would be unforgivable, even if there's the whole best player available doctrine prevails?
I think probably edge rusher, maybe wide receiver. If they don't take a wide receiver, but they have they make a trade for wide receiver, or they have a backup plan here. They definitely need to address wide receiver. And if they came out of the first 2 days without a wide receiver, without trading for one, without drafting one, I'd say, okay, what are we doing here? But also, they do need another piece along the defensive line. They do need another edge rusher. And we've talked about a million times, edge rushers get pushed up the board. And so I would not feel confident in you getting a contributor on day three that can rush the passer. So if they don't take an edge rusher in the first 2 days, I'd be a little bit concerned.
Yeah, to your point about the premium placed on edge rushers, you know, we talked during the edge rusher preview or the defensive preview, and I wrote in my mock draft a couple of weeks ago about how a guy like Jalix Hunt, the former Cornell safety turned Houston Baptist edge rusher, might be a guy who could be gettable in like round five. You look at Daniel Jeremiah's top 150, I think he was in like the 70s or 80s. So he might not even make it out of round two, which is just an incredible climb for a guy who a couple of years ago was just kind of wasting away in Ithaca, New York as a friggin' safety. And now he's might be the future of some team's pass rush in the NFL. So I agree with you that it would be tough to, you know, for as I think impressive Tavius Robinson was last year relative to expectations, we no indication that he has, you know, much of a future as a premium pass rusher. So you want to take a gamble on a guy in round two, round three. I know people might be a little bit snake bitten by, or a little bit hard bitten by, the David Ojabo experience and just the Ravens kind of iffy track record with day two edge rushers, but that shouldn't scare you off from taking a gamble on a guy like Chris Braswell.
I have a question for you, Jonas. How disappointed would you be if one of the top tier, those first round level tackles, is on the board at 30 and the Ravens trade out of the first round? So we're talking about anybody like Olufoshanu, who's not going to be there, Joe Alt, Talisi Fuaga, Amarius Mims, J.C. Latham, Tyler Guyton, Graham Barton is gone. Let's say it's Jordan Morgan, Kingsley Suamatia are the next best offensive tackles, and the Ravens trade back. Would you be disappointed? Would you think that's a missed opportunity there?
I guess how far back are they trading?
Yeah, that's a good question. Maybe they trade into the 10th pick in the second round.
So they're waiting until, 41?
Sure.
Every mock draft I've done, and I've done a lot of mock drafts, suggests that that would be a bad spot to be in, because you're kind of stuck between, you know, those whatever tier we're calling it of offensive tackles. And
yeah,
Jordan Morgan probably won't make it long into the 30s. Kingsley Suamatia, just because of his athleticism and his youth, is probably a guy who also won't make it to 41. So I think I would be very, very surprised. I'm not going to get angry. Don't write that I'm mad.
No,
I'm not mad.
Don't write that I'm mad.
But I think it would be very, very confusing if everything the Ravens have done have told us that they want to tackle, or that they need a tackle in a key spot. And there are guys, I mean, like, we just don't know the medicals on, you know, Amarius Mims. We don't know the character concerns, or the character testimony on a guy like Tyler Guyton. We don't know, even Graham Barton might fall, because I think that there are some concerns about him medically and just what he went through injury wise at Duke. So
I would, if he starts,
I don't think he's going to make it.
Obviously, don't know the medicals there, but he's the kind of player I would snap up if he falls to 30.
As a guard, his relative athletic score is 9.99. So you are not going to find a guy with that kind of build. It's pretty unreal. And again, he went to Duke, but I think we'd be willing to overlook it in our coverage.
I think that'd be fine. Two quick hitters for you real quick before we get out of here, Jonas. How many offensive linemen will the Ravens end the weekend with, having selected in this draft? And also, will they draft a quarterback?
I think they'll take three offensive linemen.
Okay.
It's tough for me to do the math, because, like, I think they probably want to trade into next year's draft because they don't love the depth in this. So if you're taking a sixth round lineman, if you're taking a sixth round lineman, does that really move the needle for you a whole lot? Like, wouldn't you just rather save a pick for next year? You know, you have the good depth of a Patrick McCary. Obviously, you're losing a year of development, theoretically, if you're not actually taking them until next year. But I just think that probably the smart move is to get three linemen. And I think with them taking three linemen, that probably says no to drafting a quarterback. And maybe them just trying to, you know, offer an absurd amount of money for an undrafted free agent quarterback, like, I don't know, Sam Hartman or something like that. Maybe Devin Leary falls off the board. Maybe no one likes Joe Milton and he falls off the board.
I tend to agree. I think they're going to take three. I would say, if I had to set the over-under on number of offensive linemen they're going to take, I'd lean more towards 3.5 than I would 2.5. I think that there's a chance that they end this draft. If they make all 9 picks, you could make a case that they could take 4 offensive linemen, and maybe just at 1 at 250, just because, like an Andrew Voorhees again. I mean, I think that they already have the depth. That's the thing, is they lack in the guaranteed starters, they have in competition for those spots, for the guard spots.
Four offensive linemen, one wide receiver, one cornerback, one running back, one edge rusher, one mystery box.
Sure. Yeah. I think that they're not going to make it. If I had to guess, I don't think they're making all 9 picks. And if I had to guess, I think they're probably taking 3 offensive linemen. I also agree with you. I don't think they're taking a quarterback. I think they will try to get an undrafted free agent quarterback, just like they did Huntley, I think those one of these guys will fall. One of these, whoever is the top rated guy on everybody's board that slips all the way down, the Ravens will have a case to make to an undrafted free agent because they'll say, hey, it's kind of an open competition behind Lamar Jackson, so they can get a priority guy there. And also, I don't think they want to spend an actual pick there. I would take a flyer on Joe Milton III, but you know, Eric DaCosta is not giving me any rings, any phone calls this weekend. But we will have complete coverage on the BaltimoreBanner.com as well as from the castle for a live stream on Thursday night, pre-pick and post-pick as well. Jonas, you ready to stay up with me? Have you brought your jammies, your pillow, sleeping bag?
I'm a night owl, Paul. You know this about me. I filed a story last night at like 2 o'clock in the morning. So getting up early is not a thing I do, which means that staying up late is a thing I definitely do.
And we're saying, I can't wait to pound some Red Bulls at like 3 p.m. tomorrow, just in anticipation for this long, long day. It's going to be fun.
You some Starbucks?
Yes. Is that a question? If you or Gianahan or Kyle Goon does not make a coffee run at some point, I'm going to say I'll be deeply disappointed.
Is Diet Coke just a like a weak substitute for coffee? Do you want those beans? You got to have those beans.
I got to have the beans. Yeah, I mean, I get extra shots of espresso in my coffee. That a regular coffee is not caffeinated enough. A Diet Coke is like child's play.
I love Diet Coke.
All right. Well, we'll be drinking Diet Coke on our live shows tomorrow. Thanks so much for tuning in at Jonas_Schaefer is his Twitter handle. I'm at Paul Mancano. We will see you tomorrow. In the meantime, get some rest. It's going to be a fun weekend. Catch you later.